Back in March, teams working with the Planck Space Telescope released the most detailed map that has ever been made of the remnant light from the Big Bang. Called the Cosmic Microwave Background, this light provides us with an image of how the universe appeared 400,000 years after the Big Bang, helping cosmologists to understand how the stars and galaxies that we see in the universe today actually formed. To find out more, Dominic spoke to Planck scientists Anthony Challoner and Stephen Grattan at the Kavli Institute in Cambridge, and started by asking Anthony where the light of the cosmic microwave background actually came from.
So the cosmic microwave background is essentially the oldest light in the universe that we can see. So since the universe is expanding, and we know that from observations that have been made in the 1920s now, if you sort of run the expansion backwards, you get to a state where the universe is much more dense and hence much hotter than it is now. And a natural consequence of a hot, dense early universe is that it should be filled with a bath of radiation, which cools down as the universe expands.
And what physically produced that radiation?
Ultimately, most of the photons in the microwave background that we actually see were produced when electrons and positrons annihilated in the early universe. But much more interesting for our application is that that radiation was essentially always very tightly coupled to matter at early times when the universe was very dense. And that's just because the universe was basically too hot for atoms to exist in neutral form. So the electrons got stripped off hydrogen atoms, and we had what we call a plasma of radiation and charged particles. And because of the charged particles, the electrons that were present, photons in the microwave background scattered very efficiently off these charged particles. And that made the universe essentially very opaque. It was almost very foggy. But then, about 300,000 years after the Big Bang, when the universe was about a thousandth of its current size, the universe was cool enough then for neutral hydrogen to start forming. So at that point, which we call the epoch of recombination, electrons and protons recombined together to form neutral hydrogen, and effectively the universe became transparent to the microwave background at that point. So by looking at the microwave background today, we essentially get a picture of what the universe was like at this relatively short time after the Big Bang, as I said, when the universe was about a thousandth of its current size.
Now, Stephen, the map that you get, I have to say, it's not a very beautiful map. It looks like a noisy map of hot and cold spots. What's that actually showing you?
That's right. It's not like a picture. It's just basically showing us the very small deviations in temperature of the microwave background radiation from different directions, corresponding to the properties of the universe at the time when the radiation was emitted. So cold spots correspond to regions of the universe that were slightly overdense way back just 400,000 years after the Big Bang, and the red spots are the regions which were slightly underdense. And it's worth pointing out that we normally see, the pictures we see are normally colour enhanced, so to speak, and you know, in fact, the cosmic microwave background is actually very uniform, and the deviations from uniformity are highlighted and amplified.
So what you're saying is that the structure of the universe at an age of 500,000 years was very different to the structure we see today. There weren't stars and galaxies. When did those form?
That's right. So they were formed in the interim, basically between the 400,000 years and today. You know, we think the universe is roughly 14 billion years old. And as time went on, we believe that gravity caused the formation of structure. So the slight overdensities grew, and in the end, formed stars and galaxies and so forth.
And how do those fluctuations that we see in the early universe relate to the structures that we see now?
It's not quite a one-to-one mapping, because what we see back then will be like more directly affect parts of the universe that are a long way away from us now.
Well, perhaps a more interesting question, actually, is how the fluctuations that we see in the microwave background were actually generated in the first place. And what we believe happened is that the fluctuations were generated very, very early in the history of the universe, during a period of cosmic inflation. So this is a strange sort of period where the universe underwent almost exponential expansion, so it was growing in size incredibly rapidly in a very short space of time. And a consequence of that is that very small length scales get stretched up to enormously large scales, which are sort of relevant for cosmic structures that we see today. Now, physics on small scales is a little bit complicated, and it's very different to the physics that we experience every day, and it's essentially ruled by the theory of quantum mechanics. So a natural consequence of inflation is that length scales which are small enough that they're being dominated by quantum effects get stretched very large and become cosmologically relevant.
So you're saying that we can see quantum mechanical fluctuations on cosmological length scales?
That's exactly right, yes. Yeah. So essentially everything that we have in the universe, we believe, is generated by these quantum processes in the very early universe. And the magic thing about inflation is that, well, it's a natural mechanism for doing this, but it also stretches them up to very large length scales that then become relevant for cosmology. But then interesting things happen, because those fluctuations, if you had a region that was overdense, it would tend to accrete surrounding matter and become a little bit more dense. But because this plasma that I referred to earlier, containing, you know, ionized matter and radiation, because it has, just like a gas has pressure, so if you take a bicycle pump, place your thumb over the end of it and try and ram the end of the bicycle pump in, the gas resists that. And it's the pressure in the gas, it's just the atoms in the gas colliding with the end of the cylinder that mean that you can't compress it easily. And the early universe is similar. So if you try to compress it, the particles in the universe, and the dominant ones actually are the radiation, they try and resist this compression. And what that does is naturally sets up acoustic sound waves in the plasma in the early universe.
So if I get this right, you've got gravity which is trying to pull these clumps together. But as they clump together, the pressure goes up because that gas is getting compressed, that's gas from radiation. So that's pushing them back out again.
That's right, yeah. So we get these sort of sound waves that are generated as a consequence of that. And I call them sound waves because they really are. Just as sound waves are propagating in this room as I speak to you, those are fluctuations in the pressure in the air in this room. So we had fluctuations in the pressure and the density of this plasma in the early universe. So we had all these sound waves oscillating around. And the nice thing is that that imprints a very specific scale on these almost scale-invariant fluctuations that were generated by inflation. And it's that scale, which is basically just how far sound can have propagated from the Big Bang until the epoch of recombination, when the microwave background was released from matter. That particular length scale is imprinted in the microwave sky, and it's what gives the sort of characteristic degree scale blobs that we see when we look in the maps that Planck has produced of the CMB temperature.
So what you're saying is, just as we're speaking to one another producing pressure waves in the air, what you're seeing in these fluctuations in the microwave background are density waves, pressure waves, sound waves travelling through that primordial hydrogen. And by observing those fluctuations, you can understand how that material behaves in the very early universe.
That's exactly right. So we can learn about the material in the early universe. So things like how much ordinary material is, the stuff that you and I are made of. We call that baryonic material. And also how much dark matter there is.
That was Anthony Challoner from the Kavli Institute, and later in the show we'll be rejoining him and Stephen Grattan to find out how those fluctuations can tell us so much about the universe.